This is my first Sunday back with you after the birth of my daughter. And my leave was 12 weeks, and as it ended on Wednesday, my husband's 12-week leave from his job began. And he was chatting with a cousin, who also happens to be a colleague, about the next 3 months. And she doesn't have kids. And she asked him, so are you planning any trips or surprise adventures in the next 3 months? And he just laughed and laughed. Because, of course, having been through a parental leave before and having just supported me through one, Erin knows perfectly well that leave is not a time for expanded horizons, opportunities to travel, or really any free time to speak of. If anything, a leave like this is, in our experience, a shrinking down of one's world to those small, mundane tasks of keeping small human beings healthy, loved, and alive. It's an opportunity many, many working American fathers and mothers don't get a chance to have. And it's hard not to experience it as a shrinking down of oneself, too. A time to put so many things that make you, you, on hold. So we both, Erin and I, found ourselves asking the question, who am I when I'm no longer getting the kind of purpose and productivity that I receive from my job? Who am I when my life needs me to be mom first, above all else? Well, today we get the story of another parent readjusting the path of his life. We don't actually know a lot about Joseph from the scriptures themselves. We don't know whether he'd been married or a father before, as would have been common at the time. What we do know is that Mary's surprise pregnancy derails the couple's plans. We do know that Joseph has a choice to make. In fact, he's already made that choice when God bursts in to tell him to change his mind. From here on out, Joseph's life is no longer about him. It's going to be about being a father to the small life growing inside his fiancée. It's going to be about being her partner, too. He's not the first person to be directed by a divine dream. He's not even the first biblical Joseph. Joseph of the Hebrew Bible, Joseph of the Technicolor dream coat, was also told marvelous things in dreams from God. But that Joseph's dreams, they were much more grandiose. They told him that he, Joseph, was destined for great things, much greater than his older brothers. The dreams told him one day that he, Joseph, number 11 out of 12, would rule over his father and brothers, would become fabulously wealthy, would save his people. And I think that when, as Americans, when we talk about dreaming big dreams, that first Joseph's dreams are often what we mean. We mean dreaming of fame and fortune, success in art or acting or one of our chosen passions. We mean believing fervently, despite the naysayers, that we're destined for more than our current life. When we tell each other to dream big, we often envision future presidencies or blockbuster movies or sold-out concerts, Nobel Prizes. This Joseph's, Mary's Joseph's dreams are much more humble. He too dreams of the salvation of his people, but the angel proclaims it's the child who will save his people from their sins. This Joseph is called to the sacred work of caring for a newborn and his mother. He's being asked to shoulder the responsibilities of fatherhood for a child that's not his own. I'm fairly certain Joseph wasn't running around changing diapers, but still, this dream is pushing him toward the mundane and sacred work of loving a fragile new human being and a brand new teen mom. And he'll do it. He'll do it. He'll go to extraordinary and ordinary lengths to raise that child in an unjust world. but he won't be doing it as a main character. God asked Joseph to be a supporting character in every sense of that word. There is a larger story at work. This past month, Netflix released a documentary all about Harry and Meghan, Duke and Duchess of Sussex, the King of England's second son and daughter-in-law. And when they married in 2018, big royal wedding, the world kind of imagined this fairy tale of a handsome prince and an American actress living happily ever after. But in 2020, the couple, just after the birth of their son, the couple split from the royal family, and that story was turned on its head. And they made this series kind of set the record straight about why they did that, why their lives were so abruptly derailed. And it turns out to be a kind of a complex plot. There's race relations, there's tabloid culture, there's colonial history. But at the end of the day, the couple really wants the viewer to believe that their story is a Joseph story, all about one man's willingness to disrupt the plan of his life for love. They create this story of a prince who gave up many of his royal privileges, his titles, his inheritance, palaces, his home country, to become a husband and a father first, above all else. Loving his wife meant standing up to the entangled institutions of British media and royal family to protect her from the same threats and harassment that led to Princess Diana's death, his mother's death. Loving his two young children meant moving miles away to give them the childhood he never had, one filled with freedom and privacy, away from the pressures of royal life. It's clear it's not the life he and others envisioned. But in the end, in that last episode, the prince insists that he is where he meant to be, doing what he was meant to do. If you had told me this time last year that I would be a mother of two before this year went out, I would have been flabbergasted. I would have been a bit terrified. I would have worried that having another baby so soon would wreak havoc on my career, my marriage, my body. I think a small part of me would have asked, but what about me? What about my plans? I'm not alone in that sort of experience of fear and shock in the face of the unexpected. And I know I've heard many of your stories. For many of you, the toughest and most sacred derailings of your lives have been all about caring for a loved one in ways you wouldn't have chosen for yourself. I've heard about how you moved to care for an elderly parent who took a turn for the worst, about how you're raising your grandchildren or your great-grandchildren, how you've readjusted the patterns of your life to protect an immunocompromised spouse, how you've had to let go of what you thought parenthood would be, how you've dropped everything to give someone a ride, to make someone a meal, to put something on that warming tree over there. So much of what I admire about each of you are the ways you've stepped up and stepped back to support others, to make your life about folks who are going through a rougher time than you are. And as self-reliant as I like to imagine myself to be, the last 3 months have driven home for me how much we all depend on people like that from time to time. My husband and I would not have made it through the last 3 months if it weren't for two sets of grandparents willing to drop everything to come help us out at last minute. I don't know what we would have done if it weren't for family, able to, and willing to let go of their plans, to pick up the pieces we were forced to drop by illness, hospitalization, cancellations, you name it. And here at St. Mark's, many of you took on additional responsibilities and tasks to ensure that these last three rectorless months went by smoothly, just as you have at many other uncertain times in our community's life. St. Mark's has had to weather many unplanned storms. And in each of these derailings, the success and survival of this community depended on each person's understanding that they are not the main character of this story. Jesus is. Joseph's story, Joseph's dreams, remind us that the supporting character roles are also callings from God. The everyday tasks that make up caring for family, for friends, and community members are the humble vocations that change and, yes, save the world. So this sermon is less of a call to action than a much needed thank you. A thank you from me, but also gratitude from God. A thank you for all the ways you've been a supporting character in the lives of strangers, friends, and family who've needed it. Now, I know you didn't do it for the credit, yet I believe the practice of faith is both about saying thank you to God and about receiving and truly feeling God's gratitude for you. So I want you to take a moment now to hear this thank you as if it is coming from God. Thank you for all the ways you are or have been Joseph. Thank you for all the times you've allowed love to change who you thought you were or what you thought your life would be. Thank you for all the moments your sacrifice and hard work have not been fully recognized and appreciated by those it's helped. For when you've put your dreams on hold to listen instead for God's humble dream for your life. Thank you for everything only God knows you've done. Amen.